Good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. and you are now tuned into Movement Museum. Here on Movement Museum, I'm Jen Doan with J.D. Papillon. We're usually also accompanied with Allison Burns, but she's actually taken an amazing workshop right now. That's probably going to change her life, right, J.D.?
Yes, it's a workshop with Jorge Origi Aloe, that former dancer of Ultima Vez that I took last December, and I'm so jealous right now. If he ever comes back, you guys need to take that workshop. It's fantastic.
I personally love Ultima Vez. They're just so stimulating in the belly, the eyes, the ears, everything. It's just so alive and aggressive and full of power.
It's visceral, right? It's just so,
So, Movement Museum, every Thursday. You can check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download our podcasts, and all of those fun things. You can hang out all day looking at us online and then listen to us every Thursday at 2 o'clock. So today we've got an awesome guest on board, and we were just outside having fun talking about the world of science fiction. So JD, who is our guest today?
Our guest today is Justin Gionnet. He's a dancer for Daniel Leveillé Dance. He's been dancing for them for about 6-7 years now. And he's dancing right now actually in Solitude Solo, which is presented at Agora de la Danse. It's going on until Sunday.
Until Saturday afternoon.
Until Saturday afternoon, perfect. And I actually caught it, and last night I'm going to talk about it after our interview. But now let's go to Justin. Hi, Justin. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm all right, man. Thanks.
So tell us a bit about yourself. You trained at York University.
No, I trained at Ryerson University.
Ryerson.
In Toronto, and they treated me really, really well, actually. I've learned a hell of a lot there.
Okay.
It was a really, really good experience for me. After that, I did a year with Tilt Sound and Motion, which was a contemporary dance company for emerging dancers at the time. I believe they folded into Canadian Children's Dance Company, or Canadian Children's Dance Theatre, which has been since renamed something else, but I've forgotten what it is. I did a year with them before joining Leveillé in 2005. I've been here ever since.
And so how's your experience in Montreal been since working with this company? Anything else, like your own projects? Like what's it been like for you here in Montreal?
Well, really, I mean, in Canada, Montreal is the place to be. Mm. If you're going to be operating in the milieu of contemporary dance, there's not a lot of options otherwise. I mean, you can make things work in Toronto and in Ottawa and apparently in Vancouver as well, but the best place to be obviously is in the capital of dance.
Mm-hmm.
So Montreal is where it's at. The bread and butter, of course, has been with Daniel Leveillé, but I've also had the opportunity to present a couple of works in Piss in the Pool, for example.
Oh, awesome. Which one? This recent one?
No, not a recent one. It was probably 4 years ago. I did a work that I co-choreographed with Jasmine Innes. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Let's see, what else? I've done some work with Stefan Gladyshevsky, whose work I absolutely adore, because you can't tell what's real and what's not. It's just miraculous, his work. And I've done some work in Ottawa as well, which is sort of commuting distance, but not quite. Mm-hmm. With a new dance company there called the Ottawa Dance Directive that opened up, I guess they're in their third season now under the direction of Yvonne Coutts. Mm. And they do some fantastic work.
So, go ahead, JD.
And do you have any intention of choreographing something soon? Do you have any projects like that coming up?
I don't have any of my own choreography coming up, although I have some ideas percolating. Maybe in the medium term. Mm-hmm. But nothing right away.
You're really wanting to just focus on being an interprete?
Well, lately, this piece that we're presenting has been my entire life.
Oh.
It's a extremely demanding piece. I guess you guys...
As I'll talk about.
Okay, awesome.
And have you been running other like pieces from Daniela Veillet around the world? Have you been traveling a bit with those?
Mm-hmm. Daniel's work, is the majority of the work we do is touring. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really refreshing to be presenting a piece at home. I can actually go home and fall asleep in my own bed instead of returning to a hotel room. When we're touring his entire repertoire, which is Amoureux et Noir, which was choreographed, I think, in 2001. La Poudre des Icebergs and Crépuscule des Océans, as well as his version of Sacré de Printemps, which we remounted a few years ago, and we've been touring it ever since. I guess people will always pay to see a Sacré de Printemps.
I'm curious to get a little deeper, like, what's it been like working for this company? You know, like, what's it like being inside the studio, you know, and what are the things that you've, like, taken with you through each unique piece? Because being in a company for 6-7 years is a long time, and you get to really know somebody, and you get to really, like, dig into those places together.
It's true. I guess I would see. We've really gotten to know Leveillet and what he's fascinated with. And I guess I could talk about that a bit.
What's he fascinated
with? He's fascinated with... he's very interested in extremity, as in pushing extremes. He wants to know what the limitations of our physical capacity are all the time. If something that we do looks too easy, he'll immediately say, okay, that's not good enough. Let's make that... turn and a half, or a double turn, or whatever it is, it's never hard enough. So we're always pushing ourselves. I guess if we can accomplish something easily, he finds it boring.
I like the way that sounds.
As a dancer, it's extraordinarily challenging.
But it's also a very, like, I feel it's always a reflection of people's thought processes and what their internal world is like. You know, it sounds like he's a man who just likes to also push himself
to the limits,
and it's never enough, and it's just like, yeah, more that fire.
Yeah, definitely. I think by pushing his dancers to that extreme, he's really exploring what's possible. He's not really interested in what's easy. Even if we can accomplish something that is easy, it's still not interesting to him. He'll say, he'll keep tweaking movements until he'll say, là ça punch. It punches, it hits. So I guess that's what he's interested in. But at the same time, he's got this fascination with this, zen-like simplicity to things, that I find it fascinating. He'll always, there'll be references to Zen and to samurai and to focus. And a lot of his movement is
very cutting.
It's cutting
space.
Cutting sharp? Through space, but then sharp, but then is will pause afterwards. Mm-hmm.
There's a strong minimalist quality to the piece I've seen yesterday. It was my first time seeing a piece by Daniela Veillet, as I mentioned to you. And that was one of the things that really struck me, how much of the focus was just on the body and space, and of how this body affected the space, which is not something that we see that much anymore, this minimalism of just focusing on the body. And how does that affect you in performing? Because, you know, quite many other companies are going to have props on stage. There's going to be more theatrical aspects. But now it's just you and the floor dancing.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's probably the most responsibility that I've ever had to maintain as a dancer, because there's nothing to hide behind. And actually, I feel more vulnerable in this new piece as a soloist with nothing than I do in many of his other works, in which we're completely naked, but there's always somebody else there with us.
Mm.
We just have so much more responsibility in this piece. If we drop focus or lose our intensity for even just a fraction of a second, that's enough to lose the audience. So that's quite a bit of pressure.
Hmm.
So you know, I guess it's really a privilege to be able to be presented with a challenge like that and to put it on stage, I think.
And because for much of the show, each of the performers, with some exceptions, did two pieces, two different solos,
mm-hmm.
which had some elements in common, but also there was a bit of a strife in between mm-hmm. each of the solos that you guys performed. What was the difference between your first solo and the second solo you did for you? Like, is there such a strife, or did you approach them completely the same?
Well, there is a strong element of what seems initially to be repetition in the piece, but that's actually not the right word for it, in my opinion. While we were building the piece, Danielle would refer to a lot to a, I guess what we would call a motif in the work. He would talk about the, and this sounds, I guess, perhaps silly, but the Rubik's Cube. So we'd be doing movements that change direction a lot,
mm.
but we'd always be presenting a different face. So we'd do a twist and a turn and a twist and a turn, and we'd end up in the same position perhaps, but the idea isn't to present the same thing, but to present a permutation
mm.
or a different face of the same movement. And I think that expands itself across the entire work as you're presented with different dancers who will end up in some of the same positions, because the piece does have a limited vocabulary. But it's always presented with a different light or a different focus slightly, or a completely different dancer, even if they do present the same position.
That sounds very fascinating, because it kind of stimulates a lot of images in my mind, even though I haven't seen the work or understand the movement. It's kind of an interesting way to describe the permutation aspect of it, because you were saying it's not really a repetition.
It's never a repetition.
So the permutation, yeah.
It is a permutation. You'll follow, like, I don't know, an algorithm of movement and end up in something that's very similar, but not quite. And it happens a lot in this work.
Is it mentally challenging to work with that? Like, in terms of just being like, oh, which... Like, because it's so similar, and yet there's a slight variation, and you have your spacing and your orientation. Like, is it like kind of a mind?
During the creation process, it was. I took notes.
Mm.
I took extensive notes. It was challenging, and it was mental mathematics, I think.
Is he mathematical? Is he calculating?
Levé was actually trained before he moved into dance as an architect.
Ah.
So
cool.
I think that was early on in his training.
We can still see that influence a lot.
I think it's
and
really
the
strong
piece from
sometimes.
Last night, it's very obvious. You were talking about the Rubik's Cube, and I felt that this the way that movements might come back, but we're not exactly repetition. I could see that as maybe building walls, and you're going to have them having a similar impact, but yet they're going to be different. They're each going to serve its own purpose, and it's going to create this 3D atmosphere, or just like chemistry, I guess, around the stage. And I felt that that's kind of what was coming out of the way you guys used the movement in the space.
Mm-hmm. And that was reflected in the creation process itself when we initially started building vocabulary for the piece, we didn't build the phrases that we see on stage. We built sections and well, building blocks, I guess. And then we took a break and we came back and we took all those pieces and spread them all out and put them back together in a different form, as if they were Legos or building pieces. That was a lot what his creation process was like this time around. I thought it was fascinating. Hmm.
Was this your first time performing on a professional stage doing a solo? Like with no one else on stage, with basically just you, right, on Marley?
Ah, oh, wow. I mean, I've done pieces where I've had solos in them. But an actual just me and the audience and nothing else? It might not be the first time, but it's definitely been a very long time. Like, it might be my first professional solo. I wonder if that's true.
Do you like the solo spotlight?
I love it.
Yeah?
Well, I'm somewhat of an egotist, I suppose, which is...
Well, let's go into that a little bit. Now.
It's kind of necessary, though, when you're a dancer. I guess you need a bit of that. Otherwise, you know, you need to put yourself out there. It's pretty necessary.
Well, I think that is part of it, is enjoying presenting oneself in that format.
There are subtleties in the interprete that I've experienced. You know, there are people who just enjoy, like, having the stage to themselves, and some people just have such, like, powerful presence that, like, just themselves, they can really capture and engage, you know, like, a whole room. And there are interprets who are very good with, like, supporting, like, being in the supporting role and just, like, totally good with that. And then I think there are those who just, like, are always, like, I don't know, take the lead or, like, steal the lights, even in a group. It's kind of cool to have experienced those.
That's true.
And I was going to ask, but, like, because when you're the first solo, you present the first solo in the piece, and when you came on stage, I sensed this frailty, this sort of fragility, but at the same time, this strength, because, of, you know, just with you standing there, right in the center of the stage, how do you feel at that moment? What's the first thing that goes through your mind as you're standing there facing the audience?
I went through a lot of mental preparation for this, especially the first solo, because it's crucial. If I'm not there and ready 100% for the very first solo, and people are bored for the first 5 minutes of the piece, then that ruins the experience for the entire rest of the cast. So for me, there was a lot of, I really wanted to do a good job in that solo, and it was vital. So, I mean, we've been rehearsing this piece forever. We were ready to do it back in May when we were originally supposed to.
Oh, right?
Wow.
For the FTA. The piece was ready then. We've been ready to do this piece for a long time. So I was ready, and it was really cathartic to finally have it on stage last night. But it's true. There is that element of fragility, and that's something that goes across Levier's work, is being able to see, and it's because of his work with Extremity. Like, you're going to be able to see my limit when you watch me doing a solo of Levier, or doing any of Levier's work, is you're going to be observing the absolute end and limit of my ability all the time. And I think that's part of the draw of Levier's work, is being able to see the dancers playing along that limit and frequently surpassing it, like not being able to support what's being asked of them anymore. And that is what helps. I think that's what helps create that fragility, is because sometimes we just can't anymore, even though we really want to.
Which to me, I mean, I'm going to come back to this during my review, but as I was telling you before the show, for me, this seeing the like the limits, the exertion of the human body, and when the more, like, your solos went through, and the more difficult it appeared. Because, I mean, at first, yeah, it's your limit, but it doesn't seem like your limit at all. Like, you guys are really well-trained, you're really powerful, and even though it seems physically exhausting, you guys seem to be doing it pretty easily at first. But towards the end, when that tension builds, that was really, I mean, you mentioned cathartic. I feel that for the audience too, there is that catharsis that happens when we finally see you struggle. And I wonder if it's not kind of like the old gladiator games of, you know, wanting to see someone get eaten alive. But in this case, it's just the exertion that finally gets you, you know?
There is that element to it. And that's one of the things that I actually enjoy about Levier's work is pushing that limit and finding that barrier and trying to cross it. I think that's fascinating. And from the audience's point of view, I hope it's equally interesting. I mean, it's difficult to judge from inside what's interesting, but for me as a performer, crossing that barrier is always fascinating.
I'm very curious, how long has he been running his company for? Do you know?
I know that the version of Sac du Printemps that we perform was choreographed in 1982.
Oh, okay. So he's...
I was 1 year old.
Oh, wow. Okay, so...
I mean, he's been choreographing for a very, very long time.
Yeah. I've never seen any work, so I'm very curious about this man.
I mean, he's an influential figure in our community, and a lot of... Well, I mean, particularly the choreographers that graduate from UCAM will demonstrate a high level of influence.
Is he still teaching at UCAM right now?
This is his very last semester.
Okay. Oh,
wow. He's retiring at the end of this semester.
Retiring as a professor.
As a professor.
As a choreographer.
He's retiring from UCAM as a professor, yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's... because I never seen Daniel Levier's work, but I'd heard so much about how much influence he's had on people coming out of UCAM. Mm. And watching it yesterday, the first person that came to mind was Fred Gravel. Mm-hmm. And, like, just in the structuring of sequences, there is such a similar quality there. I mean, Fred Gravel makes it his own. Don't get me wrong, he's not copying Daniel Levier, but just in the understanding of movement and of how to structure a sequence, there is such a strong link there, and it's really interesting to see the mentor of this younger generation and how they have approached this material. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's always interesting. It's like if I ever see one of my professors or dance teachers performing their own work, there's always this revelation that comes from seeing it. And I actually wonder, like, do you ever go see dances made by his students? And do you ever wonder, like, how it evolved from the material that you've become so familiar with?
It is an observation that I've made before about how strong his influence is. And it actually, I mean, I'll be honest and say I had a difficult time watching a Fred Gravel show the first time I saw it, because I only saw Levier in it, because that was my entire experience. And it was, I mean, the influence is there. And then after consideration, I realized what a different spin Fred has on similar themes. It's really coming at it from a completely different angle, but I just saw Levier in it. That was all that I saw, and I'd have to go back and see the piece again in order to get past that.
Well, it brings up an interesting question in originality, you know? I mean, like, it's something that I hear often, talking about how everything's been done and what can you do now, and, you know, pretty much you can only put your own take on things. And
that
seeing,
has been said, it's true.
Yeah, and seeing how, you know, our generation is going to approach things with all this cultural and technical baggage that we carry from people who came before us, mm-hmm. and how, as choreographers, as dancers, can we, you know, still make it fresh, still make it us? Mm-hmm. How would you approach that after being in company for 7 years, if you were creating now?
It's nearly impossible to avoid one's influence.
Yeah, you can never escape it, for sure. And I think that, like, true, like, innovation comes from being able to take what you have and what has been created, and then, like, being so genuinely putting your own take on it and just evolving it to the next level. Because you can never forget what your past is when you evolve. That's the part of the evolution.
It really is nearly
impossible.
It
really is.
It's like escaping a black hole.
Even in nature, they build, you know, we evolve building from what we've experienced in the past, what we know is not good, what we know is good, and we take that and we continue to just
That's true. That's yeah. evolution. That's yeah. how humans generally work. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is always innovation, but complete and like complete brand new innovation is exceedingly, exceedingly rare. Mm-hmm. For somebody to come up with something completely new mm-hmm. is it's really, really rare.
Yeah. Well, a little off topic of dance, but I just thought of an example of the iPod. It wasn't the first. The iPod, everybody has it. It was the first. There were previous MP3 players, but iPod just came out with something that was so mind-blowing, and it took that idea and made it, like, its own. And now, I mean, who doesn't have an iPod?
Well, I think that's exactly yeah. it. They're not even referred to as MP3 players mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm.
But there was also an element to Apple, which was branding. And I feel that in the contemporary dance scene in Montreal, there's a lot of that, a lot of branding, of choreographers developing their own signature, developing their image. And, you know, you see that and you're like excited for, oh, there's this show by this choreographer. You know, it's not just about what the product's going to be like, but it's also about going to see this sort of aura around the choreographer and just being part of that. Mm-hmm. And I guess that it makes your comparison even more valid, because there is this whole aspect of it's not just about putting a product out there, but it's also everything that emanates from the choreographer, of the dancers, from the creative work too that's being put out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then that's what signature is. It becomes your brand, and how you sell mm-hmm. your product is your signature.
And audiences like that. They like to go and have a reference point and something that connects them and gives them a sense of continuation. And I think that's really important, because you go to see an artist and you appreciate the quality or the value or the approach, and you go again and you experience that, because that's what drew you to it, maybe in the first place, to come to the first show and then the second and the third. And then it's up to the artist to take that and continually evolve. So we can talk about this all afternoon, boys.
We really could.
But I think it's time that we come back to the show and let the audiences know where to go see this show and see Justin and Danielle Laveille's work, which sounds really incredible.
So the show is still on tonight, Friday night, and Saturday afternoon. Tonight and tomorrow night at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. It's at Agora de la Danse. I'll talk about it soon, but it's a really strong show. It's very physical, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll get to see Justin perform.
Yes, you will.
Yes. I think we... Thank you so much, Justin, for joining us here on Movement Museum. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Movement Museum. It's about 2:30. We'll come back on the other side after a couple of station ads and IDs.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for waiting during this break. So it's time now for my review of the show that we just discussed with Justin Gionnet. So the show is called Solitude Solo. It's a show that was created in time for the last FTA, but that was not performed because of an injury. So Montreal audiences finally get to see the latest piece by Danielle Laveille. And it was, as I mentioned during the interview, it was my first time seeing a show by Danielle Laveille, and I really didn't know what to expect. And it's work that doesn't fall in my regular aesthetic preferences, but there was still something really powerful about it. As Justin mentioned, there's this need to always go for the physical limit that was present throughout the piece, and that is really powerful, I feel, as an audience member to witness. And it was also backed by some fantastic performers. I'll name them right now. So there was Justin Gionnet, Emmanuel Prou, Manuel Roque, who we had in studio last week, Gaetan Villot, and Lucie Vigneault. And pretty much all of them performed two different solos at different points in the piece. And the space was just this white square in the center of the space, and they never left the square. So there was this spotlight put directly on each of the performer when they were doing their solo. And it just felt like this very overwhelming presence that they brought to the stage every time. And then just seeing how much physicality there was to it, that was really one of my favorite aspects of the show. The just the raw physicality. And also there's this, I would say, almost a fetishization of the dancer's body, especially of the male body, because there are four male performers. And it's this thing that we don't get to see that much anymore, like just a piece with such a strong appreciation of the male dancer. Quite often males are going to be used as props in dance pieces, either lifting or, you know, anything like that. And here it was very much about appreciating what the male body can do. And I say male body, but, you know, Lucy Vigneault, the only female performer of the piece, really held her own too, though. She just had this visceral, strong presence on stage. And I guess that this is what really made the show for me. There were aspects which I had some reticences with. When it comes to the phrasing and the structure, sometimes it can get a bit off-putting, I would say. The way it's structured is there's a sequence which is going to be a few movements, then stop, pausing. Sometimes it's just holding a position and then moving on to another sequence. And as Justin mentioned, it does work very much as building blocks. But when you see it, you don't understand it right away. Anyway, in my case, that's pretty much what happened. You see it, and afterwards, you see how it all builds up together. And I guess it's not so much about seeing the whole product together at once. It's really about seeing the evolution of each of the solos. But when you first see it, it doesn't hit you anyway, not until the second or maybe third piece, when you like start understanding what the process is like. And that's when I started enjoying the show much more. Like during the second, third piece is when it really sort of took flight for me. And basically, I feel that everyone should see at least one Daniel Leveillé piece, because he has such a strong signature. He has such a strong understanding of his material. And I really feel that it's, you know, it's a good show to see, but come at it prepared, not like to have maybe, if you like fluid, very constant in motion dance, this is not it, and you might be disappointed. But at the same time, sometimes it's good to
challenge the senses and our
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And you know, it was a challenge for me going to the show, but I'm really glad I did, because I felt that it opened some doors inside of my mind. And yeah, so it's a good piece. You should definitely go see Justin dance in it.
Mm, awesome.
And now for some dance news.
Dance news. It's been a while since we've covered dance news.
Yeah, we've been busy these past few weeks. We haven't really had time to talk about
dance news. Because Montreal is a hot spot for dance, so we just have all these amazing people coming in to talk to us and share their stories and inspirations. So we're just, filling
it
up.
More and more things happening already. Like, it's the end of September, and there's just so many things happening already. This upcoming weekend is the Journée de la Culture. Journée de la Culture is this tradition in Montreal that they do pretty much, well, that they do every year. And it's also going on throughout Canada. And Journée de la Culture are 3 days of interactive activities, discovery, appreciation of arts and culture, offered free to the public throughout Quebec. It's been going on since 1997, and it's always on the last Friday of September and the two following days. And what I suggest that you guys do is go see the website, journeedelaculture.com, and you can search by type of activity, by day, by location, and see just exactly what's happening around you guys. And there's also, they hand out just flyers with all of the activities inscribed. There's things such as free classes, free shows, workshops, all of that. And I'm, you know, it's, I just feel that anyone who's interested in culture, who wants to broaden a bit their horizons and, you know, maybe not just focus on dance, but see visual arts, see music, you know, just it's the right opportunity to really try something new.
Hmm. You sold me.
Good.
So what else do we have on the
Festival Phenomena, which is the former Festival Voix d'Amérique. Which was produced between 2002 and 2011. It's pretty much like the phoenix born out of its ashes. It's a new festival, but, you know, resting very much on the shoulders of the festival that came before, the Festival Voix d'Amérique. And it's a festival that encompasses many different types of art forms. There's dance, there's music, there's theater. And you guys can see the whole program at festivalphenomena.com. And actually, Manuel Rock, that we had in studio last week, is going to be performing as part of that too. So
he is a busy man.
His piece at Tangente, he's doing right now the show with Daniel Leveillé, and he's going to be performing as part of that too.
Busy little man.
Yeah, and it should be a good. I've never really gone to Festival Voix d'Amérique, to be honest. So I'm not the biggest spokesperson for them because, let's face it, I've never really experienced it. But looking at the program, I think that there's something that's going to be really interesting for a lot of people. Also,
I like the... I'll give out the shout-outs for the submissions, call for artists.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about Bougie C, because I'm applying, so I know a little bit about it. But yeah, Bougie C is a festival that's been taking place here in Montreal. I don't know if it's in the third or fourth year, but... really amazing for anyone who out there who considers themselves an emerging contemporary choreographer. So I think that the Bouge DC takes place in January 15th. I'm not going to give specific dates because I don't know. Sometime in January. But they're calling for artists right now to submit work for the Common Space Show, which is the main headliner there, where artists get to submit a work that they would like to remount and put it into the show. So new works aren't accepted. They have to be something that's already been created and performed.
Actually, it's possible to present new works as long as you have a basis.
Brand new creation.
Even if it hasn't been it's something that, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's been presented in a professional setting. Mm-hmm. It's something that you've already developed. So you can't expect, because, you know, it's coming up so soon, you can't just expect to come in and be like, okay, I've got this idea for a piece and I'm going to develop all of it before January. Because that's not really part of the process.
Yeah. So the application is online. You can go to Bouge DC. BougeDC.com, BougeDC.com, and you'll find the online application there. It's actually really simple. Like, you don't have to really stress out about it. You just need some videos, a couple of good paragraphs describing yourself, your work, what you're going to do in the remount, and then you submit it for October 6th. 6 p.m. I believe is the deadline. So anyone out there who has something and wants an opportunity for the community to see it, I highly suggest jumping on this one and getting your applications in ASAP.
One of the things that we talked about Bougie C when we had Amy Blackmore come on the show is that it's really a fantastic opportunity because they pair you up with a mentor, and that mentor, depending on the way you and the mentor decide to approach the partnership. Sometimes it's just going for coffee together. Sometimes it's the mentor coming into your studio. And this is something that is so hard to come by. Like, having this chance of having someone who has experience, who has, you know, a different approach maybe sometimes to the creative process, come into your rehearsal or just talk with you about what you're trying to do and really come in and, you know, they're there to give their experience, to give an outside eye.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just a fantastic opportunity.
It's very valuable. It's quite valuable having that. I mean, for myself, I'm applying and I'm interested to have that mentorship support because I'm creating and performing in my own work. So to have someone outside clarify any ideas and concepts and help us even with performance quality is just, you know, it's going to be great. And you get to really meet a lot of artists too, because it's a community that comes together and does a lot of volunteer to get this stuff happening. And a lot of artists are involved, and not to mention that there's going to be workshops and things that you can attend as well for personal development.
If you guys are interested in just helping out with Bush DC, also check out the website. It's a fantastic team. And actually, our own Allison is part of it too. And I'm sure that if you're interested in participating, they'll find a way for you to just become involved. You'll meet great people. And it's really a blast. Like, the whole festival is... There's this energy of just, like, the dance community coming together and really just hoping to see good performance, to see the scene evolve also. And it comes from a grassroots base, and I it's still felt very much in the way it's run, I feel.
Yes, so we're definitely fans, and Amy Blackmore, we're giving you good shout-out. So let's go to another call for artists, Vue sur la Relève. I don't know a lot about it, so JD, what do you know about this call for artists?
Vue sur la Relève happens usually around the spring. They're doing a call right now. The inscriptions are, apply through the webpage. It's vuesurlarelève.com. It's a festival that happens from April 10th to the 27th for the 2013 edition. It's going to be the 18th edition of the festival. It's been going on for a while, and kind of like the Festival Phenomena, it brings together like both performing arts, like theater, dance, performance art sometimes. It brings a lot of musicians too. There's some fantastic acts which are produced as part of that. There's some circus. There's storytelling. It's really a broad festival that just happens all over the place. And the applications are until October 28th. And actually, according to the website, if you apply before October 15th, the application fee is smaller. So it's good, you know, if you have something that you'd like to present. And there are some big performers. Manuel Roque himself, again, that we had last week on the show, did Vue sur la Relève. There's just a Corinne Grandemarais presented something, I think, last year that I saw. And it's really a good platform, not only for the dance audiences, but really if you want to present your stuff to people who are not really into the dance scene, but that, you know, could be maybe open to discovering some dance. It's a great festival for that, you know, away from stuff like Quartier Danse, which is going to bring in much more of a dance audience. Vue sur la Relève brings people from all backgrounds. And I feel that there's something really interesting about that, about bringing audiences from, you know, pretty much all over. There's also this workshop happening very soon. It's... the name of the workshop is Danse Toujours, and it's being taught by Erin Flynn, Audrey Juteau, and Emily Honegger. Sorry if I butchered your name. It's going to be October 6th and 7th, and October 13th and 14th. It's happening at Circuit Est, at the Espace Saint-André, so on Saint-André Street at the corner of Ontario. And the workshop for those dates is from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it will include things such as Pilates, dance technique class, improv, choreography, and yoga. And I've had Erin Flynn as a teacher before, and she is really fantastic technique teacher. And it's part of why I'm mentioning it on the air, because I really think that if you have time during those dates, it's something that I feel it's also a good combination, because you're bringing in, you know, good body work, you're bringing in technique, improv, choreography. So for people who are interested in taking a workshop but who can't do from 9 to 3 p.m. at 303, well, this is a good possibility. For more information, you can check out the website. Let me just look it up. So it's dansetoujours.ca. And the information is also on the Circuit Est website if you look it up.
So there's one last thing I see here, and I think it's also worth mentioning, because JD is the... what is your role in Studio 7, JD?
I'm co-hosting, co-organizing, coordinating, pretty much everything, actually. Yeah, Studio 7 is actually for people who have graduated from Concordia. It used to be called Cabaret. So it's this informal performance evening that is put on the Concordia campus. And that's not just for dance. It is made, created by the Department of Contemporary Dance at Concordia. But we really try to bring in, performers from many backgrounds. So for the show that's coming tomorrow, Friday night at 8 p.m., there's going to be musicians. There's going to be improv, improv with live musicians. There's going to be some dance performance, some theater, some poetry reading. There's going to be some circus act, very varied. And the point is to really try to bring people together so that they can connect, so that, they can exchange, so that they can meet people that they'd like to collaborate with. And it's not open only to Concordia people to apply. Awesome. I'm co-curating it too, and we're really looking for people who have interesting propositions, who are maybe not really established or fully established yet, but who would like to come in and basically show their approach. We're also really especially interested in multidisciplinary approaches, so mixing of music, dance, theater, performance, art, all of that.
What do you guys provide technically for the performers? How does it work, in terms of when you come in, you set up, you have a little bit of lighting options, sound, what things do you guys provide for these people?
Well, it's in the black box of the dance department, which
still
is
pretty nice.
It's a fully
nice
functioning
space.
Black box. It's actually a great space. That's where we do our December shows. And there's a lighting technician, which is a student. So it's not a professional lighting technician. It's a great opportunity for our students to develop their skills as lighting technicians. There's also a sound technician, again, a student. And the black box is fully functioning. There is a projector. So we're going to be showing movies too tomorrow night. And it's a great dance space. It's just, as I mentioned, it's an informal performance, so it's free entrance. And just one last thing. So it's at the John Molson School of Business building, which is at the corner of Guy and de Maisonneuve. And you can also look up Studio 7 on Facebook and all of the information about the performances and everything. And if you'd like to apply, all of it is on the Facebook page. And basically that's it. And it's also something that we're going to do twice again this semester and three times next semester.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to look into applying for that.
Yay!
So I think that's all the time we have today for Movement Museum. So here it is. We're going to give it to you again. You can find us on Facebook for sure. Follow us on Twitter. Download our podcast to listen to some past reviews. We've had some really, really talented, amazing artists here in the studio with us. Again, sharing their stories and their inspirations. And check us out definitely on movementmuseum.com. Leave us a post, make some comments, make some suggestions. Who do you want to hear? What do you want to hear? And all of that stuff. We'd like to communicate with you guys out there because we put it out there, but we don't really hear as much from, those who are out there listening to us. So that's about it. Tune in again next Thursday from 2 to 3 p.m. CKUT 90.3. I'm Jen Doan. Been here with JD Papillon. We were talking to Justin Gionni with Daniel Lavier Dance. You can check him out at Agora de la Danse this weekend. And from the interview, it sounds like it's something that everybody should definitely see at some point if you're interested in contemporary dance, seeing the work of Daniel Lavier. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a good weekend and stay out of trouble, kids. We'll be right back.
do you want it?